as the moon, bright as the sun.
This is Talk Is Cheap, and today I've got a local activist, hip-hop guy, Plato. So, the show's called Talk Is Cheap, and I've got with me today philosopher of play, spoken word poet and MC, tribal hip-hop raptivist, Plato. Plato, are you still there?
Yes, good to be here, thank you.
All right, so you got a new album out. Let's hear. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the new album is not out yet, but it's coming out in a few months, and it's called Empires Die, Life Evolves. And the concept behind it is an exploration of this question of what does it mean to be alive in this particular time in history in which everything is changing, and how do we move forward, and how do we come to terms with the past? And it's an epic album in that it's 22 songs, so it's going to be a double album put out on vinyl. And I've worked with close to 50 musicians to realize this project, because I feel like I'm just one perspective of what's going on in the world. And so I really worked hard to get all these different people to contribute, and I got a lot of like local luminaries, like members from like High Step Society and Soul Vibrator and Jora LaFleur and M55 and Benny Cosmic, who does a show on y'all's station.
Yeah, Firewalker Radio
on
Fridays.
As well as working out and reaching out to a bunch of worldwide collaborations. So I have people on my album from Great Britain, Korea, Uganda, Madagascar, Costa Rica, Guatemala. And so it's this really cool musical mosaic that covers a lot of different genres and styles, but is rooted in hip-hop.
Huh. Well, and so now.
Oh yeah, yeah. You talk. I can keep talking.
Keep going. But I mean, you're telling me too that the reason you have so many people on there is because it's you want to have a lot of perspectives. Because, like me, I take the best of every philosophy. I don't follow one philosophy. I look for the best part of every philosophy. So, can you elaborate on that a little bit about what you're getting, the diversity that you want on your album?
So you know, I think about these two songs I got back-to-back. And one song has, like, this young man that comes from, like, this punk rock background. And then the very next song has this woman that is a soul singer. And, you know, they're of different races, different genders. I don't know if they will ever meet each other. I know they don't know each other now. But through my album, they get to be next to each other song by song, and they're bringing their energy in different ways, their music across in different ways. But I think the listener can see and hear, or rather hear, that we're all a part of this together. And so, yeah, you have some punk rock dude and some, like, soul singer goddess sharing space.
Wow.
Through this project.
Neat. Yeah, and art is a corroborative effort too. You know, you don't I'm an artist myself, and I draw on things in the past, from the past, and combine things and come out with something new.
Yeah,
kind of a dialectic. Yeah, you know, you did radio, so you understand that I forgot to do my station ID. So this is KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. You want to tell me a little bit about your experience with community radio?
Yeah, in college, I started working as a music librarian for work study at the campus station, and I really loved it. Yeah. And then when I graduated, I went to work, I volunteered, at Moscow, Idaho station, and it's 92.3. I'm trying to remember the call letters right now, but I remember it's 92.3.
Well, and they're still
and
there?
And about 15 years ago. Yeah, they are.
And so what kind of music do they listen to in Idaho? Do they have hip-hop, rap and hip-hop in Idaho?
You know, I was in Moscow, Idaho, where I went to college, and it's a little blue dot in a big red state. And, you know, I would say it had typical college music and vibes. And so, yeah, they played everything. I was a hip-hop music director and a global music director.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
So what music did you bring in to the station as music director?
So, yeah, I would reach out to, like, independent labels that I was a fan of that I thought was releasing good stuff and asking for CD submissions. You know, this is about 15 years ago. So streaming was just kind of starting. It wasn't where it is now. And so you would have to reach out to different labels or just field different submissions from labels. So I would spend hours listening to reggae music or Zydeco and trying to give, like, little paragraph descriptions to DJs.
Yeah, and is there a local music scene in Idaho and even in, what the heck is the... Boise?
Yeah, in Moscow, Idaho. It's more of like an indie rock.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a very small kind of jam band. And then a folk music scene.
Right. Nice. All right, so do you want to tell me about Atlas Solutions is a community-supported... you work with Avant-Garde... What, you started the Avant-Gardeners, which I'd like to do a whole show on Avant-Gardeners someday with somebody, but... What is Atlas Solutions?
Yeah, so Atlas Solutions is a 501c3 nonprofit that uses datagraphing materials, or technology rather, to address societal problems. And so there's a few tangents that we work on as an organization, and one is like tracking hate crimes. There's ones that track, like, sexual assaults, but the one I work on is related to food security. And so that's, like, creating networks of people that grow food in certain parts of town, understanding where there's good land to grow food, monitoring and mapping how much food we can grow, and also understanding where the pantries are in local areas, and understanding how we can connect people within local areas, you know, neighborhood level, to create these kind of resilient pockets that are producing food so that, you know, we've seen with COVID how there's food price raises. And if you think about all the threats that are happening with climate change and geopolitical politics, it seems to us as Atlas really wise to figure out how we can develop a local resilient food distribution network.
Yeah, we shouldn't be relying on corporations for our food, that's for sure.
We want to get out of that. And it's also like thinking about food security in that the average farmer, last I looked, and this was about 2 years ago, so maybe the stats have changed, was 59 years old. And we feel like it's really important to start getting younger people into growing food, because if we don't replace this group of farmers, then we're going to be in trouble in 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah, and what the CSAs, you know, community supported agriculture, they get with the farmer, and then he knows how much to produce, rather than there, so that there's less waste too. And then and also we're not growing products. There's no need to grow products for export. We can use, we can keep everything local.
Yeah.
And that
I also, I really believe in that 100%. And I also teach cooking classes that came out of this journey, because I was teaching people how to grow food, and then people would be like, I don't know how to cook this acorn squash where I actually like it. And so part of it is about education, of teaching people how to eat a localized diet and how to make it taste good, and the importance nutritionally of eating seasonally. Like I just mentioned winter squash. Winter squash is high in vitamin C and magnesium and all of these things that are really important in winter. And it's like nature knows what we want or what we need at different times of the year nutritionally.
Right. It's all a cycle. Well, and also speaking of cycles, I was just reading that you also, the landfill is, a lot of the greenhouse gases are coming off of wasted food that goes to a landfill. That when, it,
yeah.
when wasted food decays, it creates methane gas. So there, you don't want to send stuff to the landfill either.
Yeah, and it's about creating those closed-loop systems. And, you know, we don't just believe in gardening. It's in the most biomimicry, permaculture way that we can do it. And so you think about, like, forest ecosystems and the leaves that fall and they break down and then they fertilize the next crop or the next year's apples.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, we want to compost our food that we grow, that we waste, or like, we don't want to waste food, but
well, yeah, but there's always something left over. Yeah.
Integrated systems.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying. The recipes, too, there's less waste when you have a good recipe for... Like, I didn't know you can eat artichoke stems. You don't have to just eat the whole stem of an artichoke.
Wow, edible. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's... yeah, the whole... And there's a lot of material there to eat. So, all right, so do you want to move on to community-supported shelters?
Sure. So... Do you have a question, or you just want me
Well, just tell me about community-supported shelters. I don't know. We've been supporting the small micro houses around town.
Yeah, and so community-supported shelters is a really unique organization, and what they do is put Conestoga huts up and build these camps for the unhoused. And on one hand, it's a hut, and it looks like a hut, but it's really more than a hut, because we provide people a home to heal and transform. And so my role at CSS is I am a camp facilitator for one of the camps in town, and they hired me through a unique process, because I didn't respond to, like, a job wanted ad. This camp was having a lot of problems. And I have I've been working with the unhoused in various capacities through the city for 3 or 4 years. And so they were having all these problems with the camp, and they were like, can we see if Plato will run this camp like an intentional community? And so I got recruited to do this job, to see if I could run a homeless camp like an intentional community. And I said, sure, why not? That's a fun challenge. And It has been quite the journey of learning how to create a safe space for numerous people coming from various walks of life with their different traumas and addictions and baggages, and figuring out how we can all come together. And it's been really beautiful, and the camp is running better than when I started. It still has conflict. And I just really value that CSS takes this unique approach to each client and the way that we take our time to really figure out how to best support each person and not just treat them like a cog in the system.
Yeah, I've been. You want to get into detail on the methods that you use? I've been doing some series on Rojava. I don't know if you're familiar with Rojava in eastern Syria, where they're using. We all use the consensus process here, but they want to hear from every person in the community has a say in what goes on, and they have meetings and make sure everyone is heard from before they make a decision. And then, then the group itself makes a decision as a committee. And when they can't make a decision, they'll do some they'll send it off to committee and have a committee make the decision. You know, come back to the main group with recommendations. But yeah, you want to get in a little bit of. Is there any special methods that you're using that would be interesting?
Yeah, I think that is super important. It's been a big journey of my past 10 years. I was a big part of the Occupy movement. And, you know, we're trying to create this revolution and a better world. And we create these camps, these occupations, and we're instantly working with largely the most disadvantaged people you can imagine. And we would come to meetings with 100 people trying to build consensus, and we have no tradition of building consensus in this country. And that's why, in my opinion, from internally, why we failed, and there's external reasons and outside pressures that led to Occupy failing, but on the internal side, it was we didn't know how to create effective consensus, and that's been a big journey of mine ever since then. Like, I teach this summer camp every summer, except for this summer because this stupid virus, called
I call it the deforestation virus, but go on.
The what?
I call it the deforestation virus because it's caused by deforestation, in my opinion. But anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I miss all the gigs and stuff that I lost because of it.
Yeah, I was just getting into the open mic scene, too, in this town, around the state, and all that's just gone.
Yeah, so I miss teaching the summer camp, because what I would do at the beginning would be like, I need all of y'all to figure out what your mascot is in 1 minute or 2 minutes. And, like, you know, the kids argue, and some kids get pushed out, and some kids dominate. And then we talk about what happened, and we explore through a two-week process. But by the end of 2 weeks, when I go to give them a little group decision they have to make, they will all sit down. They have a vibe checker. They have a facilitator.
Wow.
They have note takers, and they learn how to create consensus. And, you know, it's a lifelong practice, but at least gives a foundation to grow into as they age.
Yeah, get them started young. Well, so getting back to community-supported shelters, or I'm sorry, is there something else? Did I let you finish?
There was one more thing I was going to say, but we can go back to CSF.
Well, the security, is, as you know, is an issue right now with everybody. Is there anything special with, I imagine, the homeless? Is there anything special you do with security? I remember there was a homeless camp long ago out on West 11th out there where there were problems with security. And in Rojava, everyone takes a turn at security so that they know what's going on, what issues, you know, who has the dog that barks too much and who has mental issues and who has drug issues. Everyone takes a turn at security. So go on.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I think when you're creating group cohesion and group peace, you need to do certain things. Like, everybody should have some kind of responsibility towards the group project. You should feel like ownership of, I got security, or, you know, I'm helping on kitchen duty. And then another thing is, I think everybody needs to be affirmed and valued for who they are and what they naturally are bringing. And then it's like figuring out the best use of each person dependent on what their background and skills are. And really making sure that people feel valued and heard and understood creates less conflict in the long run.
And they're not just a cog in a machine, like you say. They have their life has value. They have what's the word? No, I can't think of it anyway. Agency. They have is that the word? They have agency. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, was there something else you wanted to say about the kids that you were doing that I cut you off there?
Yeah. The thing that I was going to talk about was when creating peace with these kids and better communication flow, it's really important to make sure that we have clarity of what we're talking about and the issues at hand and the solutions that everybody's bringing. Because, like, when I think about what happens on the adult level politically, we have gotten ourselves to a place where you can see these different arguments emerge, and neither side is really kind of talking about the same concepts in the same way, and there's no shared common ground of understanding. And because there's that lack of shared ground of understanding, it's hard to build solutions or even understand what the problem is for everybody and what the common values are for everybody.
Well, so how do you do that? How do you get people on the same page? Because that's moving into my next question with you, is how do you teach people? What, you have different methods of teaching people, don't you?
Yeah. I think about this experience I had a couple weeks ago in the WIC. And I was looking on Facebook, and all these people are like, there's a bunch of Proud Boys in the neighborhood. And there was a bunch of fear. And I was like, I'm going to go talk to them. And so, like, I walked right into this group of people, and they have their guns, and they have their masks, and their flags. And I sit in between all of them on the ground, and I say, hello, my name is Plato. I have nothing to hide, and I'm not afraid. And the reason that I took a vulnerable position and sat down is because I think it's always important to keep your energy level calmer and slower than the person you're trying to engage and calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I sat down, I just started to ask, like, what are you doing here? You know, what are your values? Like, so some people talked about they valued safety, and they didn't want Eugene to become like Portland, and they have this idea in their head that, like, every protester at the BLM event that was going on the WIT was like Antifa, and that the city was going to erupt in a riot that night or something. There's like a lot of concern, a lot of fear, and a lot of worry for the safety of the city. And then when I think about people from, like, the left or progressive culture, I think we also value safety. And I think that the protests are motivated out of impulse towards creating a safer world. And so from there, we already have one shared value that we can grow
some common ground,
bonds of humanity and affection out of.
Mm-hmm. Well, a little more on de-escalation. I notice it's actually more empowering. It's more courageous, for one thing, but it's more empowering to de-escalate. You know, instead of someone comes at you with confrontation and you come back with confrontation, instead you de-escalate, you've actually gained power over the situation. And power is the wrong word, I know, but I mean, you've leveled the playing field, sort of, in a good way. And you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I would have walked up to that group with an energy that was like, wow, you know, they're going to come back at me with like a rah, rah, and then come back at them with like a rah, rah, rah. And, you know, it's just this acceleration of force and power. And the problem with that, I think, is the only way it can work is if you just wipe out the other side completely. But that's not practical and realistic.
No.
And we all share this city. You know, like, one thing I realized is, like, that day there were some people that were probably Proud Boys and probably affiliated with these, like, networks. But a lot of people there were people from our city with different understandings and political opinions. And they have this big concern. And I just thought it was interesting how they were thinking everybody down there was Antifa. And then we can also cartoonize the other side and be like, all of them are Proud Boys. And,
right, it puts yourself in the other person's position, sort of. Empathy, yeah. When, now, this may be judgmental and sanctimonious of me, but I actually look at them as handicapped people because they're ignorant of the truth. And not that I am the arbiter of truth, but, I mean, I understand that there's something they've been deprived of. They either have not been educated well, or they have family issues or head trauma or alcohol, drug abuse. There's something wrong. There's something else going on, and that isn't really their fault, even though they're reacting to it the wrong way. So I maybe that's judgmental of me, but I try to look at people as handicapped.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of energy out of me to do it, though, I got to say. We have a guy named Art, The Art of Relating. I can't think of his name. Art Schwartz, or Art, I can't think of his name, but he does a show. And that's what I asked him, and he's saying that you actually gain energy by doing this. But I find it difficult to, it kind of takes a lot of energy out of me to do it. So I'm working on that, trying to somehow gain energy by de-escalating things. Can you tell me how to, gain energy?
I don't know if I even gain energy out of it.
You were done with the Proud Boys thing, you were on top of the world, weren't you?
Yeah, I was up till like 4 a.m. I had so much adrenaline pumping in my body.
Uh-huh.
For me, I guess part of it's the game of figuring out what's the right question to ask, and you're in live, you know? So, like, people are bringing their own perspectives and answers, and you have to, like, really quick internally process what they're saying and figure out how you want to kind of direct the flow of the conversation. And that, to me, is an energizing, thrilling challenge.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like creating a new work of art.
Yeah.
All right. So when I was talking about your methods, though, do people learn anecdotally, do you think? Through story? You do things with stories, don't you?
Yeah. Stories are great. I think stories change the world, and the world is made of what stories we believe. And I think that stories build empathy better than anything else in the world. Like, I remember in college, I had this book I needed to read, and it was by Maya Angelou, and it's called Heart of a Woman. And she's in, like, a traditional African wardrobe. And I remember getting this book at, like, 18, 19, and being like, Heart of a Woman? I have to read this? What am I going to have in common with it? And I still have that book 18 years later because it was so profound. And reading her story helped me understand humanity at a greater level beyond my experience.
Well, yeah, and this is why literature is so important. You don't think that literature class is really boring, but you know, stories like, do you remember the lottery? I don't know if you got taught the lottery in high school, but or you know, the Scarlet Letter, or any of those, or any of the Dickens, you know, stuff. You learn from those stories. Those are classic examples, but I like your example better, but. Well, and so
no, it's true.
What about what other cultures do you know? Every culture does this, don't they? uses stories to teach people.
Yeah. It's how we weave the world. And, you know, I think that the world that we live in, like I said earlier, is a result of the stories that we tell. And if we change our understanding and stories around money or relationships or humans' role in nature, it can have profound effects. And I think that traditional cultures have understood this for a long time, that story, and I would include ritual, are great bonding devices for a tribe, a group of people.
All right, I got to do a station ID. It's KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, streaming online at KEPW.org. Do you want me to play one of your songs right now, or do you want to keep going and I'll play it at the end, or do you want to hold on while
Maybe let's do the interview in full and then...
go back to the song, okay.
You play the song or two. Yeah.
All right, so whatever direction you want to go, but I have here... Well, where have you performed? What? Tell me about your performances and where you've performed some of the highlights.
I usually perform at the Whitaker Block Party every year. I usually perform at Oregon Country Fair every year. And I have been lucky enough to perform at certain, like, alternative schools and college campuses and churches around the Northwest. I've been active for about 15 years. So at that point, you know, I've performed in Washington and Oregon and Idaho and Montana and California. I haven't really got off the West Coast as much as I'd like, but maybe in the future, hopefully.
All right, let's see. So on your website, I got some of these questions. What do you call personal accountability and community action and celebration? What's the importance of celebration, for instance?
You know, I think of that Emma Goldman quote that's like, if I can't dance, I don't want to be a part of your revolution. And I really do believe we have to take time to go into those tender places of experience. I think the world will change when we learn to sit with our pain. But on the flip side of that coin, if we aren't living for joy and trying to create a more joyous world, then what are we doing? What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my activism is inspired out of joy and love. And I accept where everybody comes to their activism from. And I know I've came to activism at times in my life because of pain, because of sadness, because of anger. But as I really continuously grow into this lifestyle of being a changemaker and an activist and trying to be as best as I can at that, I find that for me personally, if I approach my activism and changemaking from a perspective of joy and a feeling of joy and love, then I am more effective.
And what, we're the only animal on the planet, I think, that dances for the sheer joy of it. I got that from Tom Robbins, I think. That
Robbins, nice. I love him.
Yeah, that did Skinny Legs and All and all those. I went to one of his book signings, and it's all women. Read Tom Robbins. It's almost all. If you want to meet a woman, go to a Tom Robbins book signing. I don't know if he's still alive, but
he's in his 90s.
Yeah,
he's still out there.
And he wrote Jitterbug Perfume. That was the point of Jitterbug Perfume, that we're the only animal on the planet that just dances for the sheer joy of it, rather than mating.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a mating ritual of sorts, but not always.
Yeah.
So personal accountability, though, what can you tell me about that?
About personal accountability?
Yeah, why is that important, to be accountable to your actions, to be responsible for your actions? Is that what that means?
Yeah, because I think that when we become more empowered in life, it grows with the responsibility. And I also think that as another side tangent, is that if you want to create a healthy environment, everybody does need to be personally accountable. I think that environments or contexts or groups in which people don't practice personal accountability become toxic over time. And I like to tell people this phrase that I have, that is, external authority is irrelevant when we have internal discipline. And so the more that we are disciplined within ourselves and practice that personal accountability with our actions and honestly reflecting on what we've done, good and bad, how we can always grow, we are able to grow in a better way and direction. And we don't need somebody from outside telling us what to do and what's right, you know?
If you do it yourself. Yeah, to me, that's an anarchist concept, is if we all respected one another in the environment, we wouldn't need any rules. We wouldn't need any laws if we all just had a little respect for one another and the environment. You know, it just reminds me of, I don't know if you're familiar with, it was called EST, was Werner Erhard, was, and one of the, I never went to, he had these seminars that went on for days at a time, you know, and you, they don't tell you what happened. I don't know what happened in those seminars, but one of the things that came out of that was, you're not responsible for other people's feelings. But he ended up coming, he ended up reversing that opinion that, you're responsible for your actions. And if you do something that hurts somebody, you know, you need to make it right, or at least apologize for it.
Yeah.
A lot of 60s people went to the Werner Erhard thing. So I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
No, that's great.
So what about current event? What do you think about the current events right now? And then we'll get back to let's do that later. You know, this is kind of informal. The show, I kind of do things informally here.
Yeah.
So, and it's not because, you talked about this a little bit. You touched on it. Maybe you want to elaborate and get into Buddhism. But I was telling you that on this show, I try to look at the third way. There's left and right and black and white and yin and yang. And then there's a third way and a dialectic. You know, it's Hegel's dialectical materialism, that something comes out of those two things that are smashed together. And anything on the third way, I guess that's is that a Buddhist concept? Or, but there's a third way of looking at things.
Buddhist circles, and sometimes I hear this the middle way, sometimes the third way. And I agree with it. I think that life is very often nuanced, and things come on a spectrum very often, and it's not very often black and white. And so you got to balance those other sides, you know.
There might be a reason that someone's doing something that you need to find out what the reason is, but go on, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, what did you just say? I want
that there might be a reason why someone is doing something, and that you need to find out what that reason is, and then come up with a third solution that maybe they have a good reason for doing what they're doing, but in the situation, if the situation were different, that reason would cease to be important. So in that way, there's a third thing going on that, and you know, I could come up with an example, I guess, but am I making any sense at all?
Yeah, like what I think of is, like, you have an argument between two people, and one person's like, I think we should eat this food. And another person's like, I think we should eat this food. But what is the third way, maybe through exploring the commonalities of the desires between the two people, so you can figure out what the dinner is?
Well, but I mean, what I'm saying is maybe one person didn't know that the other person was lactose intolerant. And so, we can't eat cheese, so I can't go to the quiche place. We're just going to have to come up with something else, but we can go have eggs or something. I don't know, you know. So there's a thing that you didn't know about is and this knowledge from talking to one another, when you find out more about it, more about what the other person's coming, where the other person's coming from, then you come up with a third way. So so anything on that? Any more?
I agree. We don't know where somebody's always coming from. And I like your definition in that it takes sensitivity to the other person. And if the third way can help us be more sensitive to each other, then I'm all about it.
Well, and so you talk about forbidden knowledge and alternative learning. Have you got some examples of forbidden knowledge, or is that forbidden? Or you were not allowed to talk about that. You're forbidden
from
talking about that.
That was a review of me, written by a music journalist. I feel like there are a lot of truths that are relevant to different people, depending on what stage of some kind of evolutionary or educational spectrum they're on. And for me, if somebody's at A, I'm going to meet them at A and try to get them to B. If they're at D, I'm going to meet them at D and try to get them to E. If they're at Q, I'm going to try to get them to the R. Mm-hmm. But if somebody's at A, our kind of perspective might not be the relevant and the proper time. And so I don't know if that's like hidden streams or forbidden knowledge streams. Like I said, that was just a review from somebody else of their interpretation of me. But for me, I definitely try to meet people with where they're at and take them further and realize that certain truths that certain people aren't ready for, and taking patience and time to get them to there. And maybe as an educator, there's some ego and fallacy of me thinking I know what truth is and where people need to go, but I try my best.
Well, and you've you're at least coming from an educated and experienced position. So what goes on in your workshops? What methods do you use? Please feel free to talk. What alternative methods do you use in your workshops?
Yeah, they're always very participation-based. And so I'll tell you about a few different classes I do, for example. It's like I do a class called Hacky Sack Philosophy. And what that is I introduce a hacky sack to the students at the beginning of the class. I say, this is a conversation starter and a community builder. And then we get in a circle. I get these kids outside of the classroom and outdoors, and I get them out of their heads and into their bodies. And every session that we do, we cover three things. We cover an aspect of communication. So, like, what is good listening look like? What is a good open-ended questioning look like versus a closed-ended question? And then we spend time talking about a logical fallacy. You know, this is why a straw man argument doesn't work. And then we take a bunch of time to discuss a contemporary philosophical issue, climate change or changing identity related to gender, something like that. And we explore together what is right, as opposed to trying to argue who is right. And that is a direct response to the philosophy degree I had, which basically taught me how to argue like a pit bull with people. And another class I do, though...
But you don't argue like a pit bull.
And in empowered leadership, I give these students all these games. All my classes are based on games and activities. But I'll give them a game like... In silence, I need you to make an origami frog in 3 minutes, and then I'll give everybody a set of instructions. and I'll give them a piece of paper that's not the right size, but I won't tell them. And I'll give them all partial instructions, so they're missing steps. But together, they have all the steps. And then, you know, I'll be like, go, you have 2 minutes or 3 minutes to make your origami frog. And they think they're doing some kind of fun little activity about making an origami frog. But we're really, like, doing an activity about resilience, about being resourceful and being like, oh, I don't have all the instructions. But look at what that person's folding over there. It's about communication and nonverbal communication. And then we'll talk about the experience afterwards.
Cooperation.
And so it's just, like, built on a lot of fun activities that are engaging. And then I'll pull it back and I'll give a good lecture for 15, 20 minutes. And then next game.
Yeah, so we'll get back on how to get... Well, you're not doing workshops now because of the COVID-19, I take it.
Yeah.
But people can... We'll get into people donating. I noticed there's a in your graphic of your name, there's a 7 in there. What's the significance of the 7 in your name?
I was born
graphic?
On the 7th.
Oh, okay.
Lucky 7. You know, it's funny, though, is I think that my true number is 8. I discovered that last fall when I was for divorce. And it's like, oh, I think I just haven't been doing myself quite full enough, and I need to take it from the 7th to the 8th. So I still love 7. It's my long-time classic love number, but lately I've been feeling the 8.
Yeah, that's infinity, isn't it? The 7, there's also, you know, the Native American thing where they plan out for 7 generations. They make decisions that will affect the 7th generation.
Yeah, I love that concept.
So, anything on rap? Can you tell me, as an old man, I used to listen to, I got into Gil Scott-Heron and a little bit of, I thought I've got some Lee Scratch Perry in there somewhere. What, isn't rap supposed to be political and not love songs? Or is that, is hip-hop the love song of rap, or how does that work?
It's both. It is and it isn't. Like, at its core root, I truly believe that hip-hop is the sound and culture of poor people trying to improve their situation. And I think that that's how you know, it's kind of famous to think about, like, a hip-hop person bragging about themselves. But where does that come from? It comes from this experience in which you are downtrodden or oppressed or undervalued in society, and these people started coming together, and, like, you know, the do-rag was sold as, like, a cheap item, and then hip-hop made it fashionable, and now you can spend $30 on a do-rag because they created value out of their shared experience and their shared affirmation of each other. And so there is this very political aspect to the music that's very implicit to the art form. Now, granted, the first hip-hop show was a house party. Mm-hmm. And there's a side of hip-hop that comes out of funk. And funk isn't intellectual. Funk is sexual. Funk is armpits, you know, and dirt and stuff. And so there's also this side of hip-hop that is rooted in maybe a lower chakra, or rooted in the funk, rooted in
George Clinton,
a little bit more humane animal side of life. But at the other side of it, the average rap song has over 400 lyrics, like words, and the average rock song has under 100. And so there's so much room for intellectualism. That's what brought me to hip-hop in my life. My parents were old hippies. I grew up with Bob Dylan and Rolling Stones and Jimi Hendrix and people like that. But when I heard hip-hop in first grade, I was like, oh my God, I'm in love. I can't believe they're doing so much with these words. And they're playing all these word games. And I just fell in love from first listen with the way that they use language and how much space hip-hop gives you to play with language. And that's very intellectual.
I'm amazed.
And it can be very political.
And when you look at the lyric sheet, I'm amazed at how many words these guys can remember. Just as an aside, you know what I'd like to see is there's all these drops. Part of this show I do, I punctuate it with progressive rock and jazz fusion stuff. And what I'd like to see, there are drops in progressive rock that I'd like to see somebody take those drops. Like if you remember Rush, Tom Sawyer, there's a big drop in there where the keyboards come in. And I'd like to see somebody make, but I guess I'm the only one that would want that. But I'd like to see those just take sections out of progressive rock and turn those into a rap, a hip hop rap. So maybe I'll commission.
Yeah,
maybe I can commission you to do
it
that.
It was more common before sampling really became a legal issue. You know, hip hop's roots were based on kids who couldn't afford instruments. And who came from schools that had their music programs cut and slashed. And so they took the turntable, the only instrument that they had, and they learned how to, if they put two turntables together, they can make unique beat creations. But they had to build off of exclusive samples from other artists because they didn't play the sax largely, or they didn't play the drums. They didn't have that opportunity. And so one thing that I love in hip-hop through the early 90s is it was sampling everybody in every genre. And that's one of the other things I really love about hip-hop is, like, in my album, I have songs that are, like, hip-hop dub, hip-hop folk. I have hip-hop punk rock. I have hip-hop soul. And hip-hop blends with all of these different formats, and it's not like I'm the first to do that. So I would love to see more Rush type of drops, too. I think it would have to be played individually and live because of legal situations that I don't agree with.
Well, what about the time signature? Do those work for the in the time signature too? I'm not a musician. Well, in junior high, but is it a faster or slower beat? You know,
So it is slower. Hip-hop tends to be set in the 4/4, too, you know? Like, at least 50%, if not, like, 60 or 70% of all hip-hop songs I've ever heard are in 4/4.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost always set at certain beat levels, like 70 beats per minute through 94 or 95 beats per minute. You know, the average rock song is at 120 beats per minute. So there is differences, but, you know, if the rapper is talented enough, then you can do hip-hop at these different beats per minute and make it sound great.
All right, so I want to have time to play your song at the end here. So anything on current events? My show is, I call it Talk is Cheapest because I try to give people solutions on this show. What's the solution to the world's problems, Plato?
So, okay, here's one thing I think about. You know, I am disappointed with the presidential candidates that are being presented.
Including Kamala Harris.
I think
Harris.
We could have done a lot better than Biden and Harris as a replacement or response to Trump. So I'm not as excited. You know, I'm going to vote, obviously. But I'm not as excited or as hopeful about these people saving us and bringing us meaningful change anymore. And so if I think of a solution, I think of my community, I think of my neighborhood, I think of my environment and the things that I can touch and interact with on some kind of more practical level. I'm very grateful for those people that take on high-level abstract political battles. But for my experience, and maybe, I don't know, from my personal experience, I think a lot of people would share this, that you see the really meaningful change on local levels. And so what I would say is get in where you fit in and then change the system. No matter what we're looking at, whether it be saving pandas or whether it be combating child trafficking, if we are bringing the right intention to the solutions we present, and we are, there's a word escaping me, if we are bringing the right intention to it, then all of these issues are connected. And so just pick an issue in your city, in your environment, and get to work on it and give some effort to it and have confidence that other people are going to take on other issues. We don't have to each of us take on every issue, but if everybody like has a pet project for one local issue and we're all bringing an intention of love and joy in the world, then I think that that's a good step in the right direction.
All right, philosopher of play, spoken word poet and MC, tribal hop raptivist Plato. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, good luck to you.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Peace, everybody. Much love.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Apocalypse is just as when the veil is lifted, so the great shift is here. Happens every few thousand years. It can even be felt in the atmosphere, so it's easy to be fueled by fear. When the old truths are revealed to be lies, when the meaning-making structures fall apart and rupture, when you come to understand the kingdoms of this land are just castles made of sand and were drops in the sea. You see the tides of change, they're rising and weak. So in this age that we all live in, if you need a compass, use the intuition to navigate through the nation. When the fire's raging in the forest, in the trees, in the cities, in the streets, where employees sweep for needles on concrete, where people lay half asleep and half dead. When the drunks creep through the bars looking for the face of God, bottom of a bottle, go to church in a brothel, go online, get hostile, it's all helter-skelter. You can follow all the rules, still wind up in a homeless shelter. Cause the big business got with the politicians, wrote the rules in their interest. At our expense is how they get rich. I know that it's hard, but baby hold on, keep that vision in your mind and that hope in your heart. Can't you see this is a house of cards, and that the greed causing it to fall apart? But when Babylon be gone, Zion will be ours. Whirlwind of transition, tell the world of science fiction is the world that we're living in, with the cryptocurrency, digital dollars, radioactive rainbows, stem cells, cell phones, bionic limbs, genetically modified potatoes, horizons of robots, everybody living in virtual reality, as the internet weaves a worldwide web. Society's now a spider on social media, technology, it is taking over. Yet what it wants, evolution began, like hydrogen begat, helium begat, carbon begat life, humans and computers. Maybe this is all evolution, but still it don't feel like a solution. The past is in the present, so what do we want to say about the future? Final hours of the ancient sunlight, alive in these times that will try our souls, as we wonder, worry, woe, if we can float while the sea herself invents her own boat. But yo, I don't know what this means for you and me in this moment, but we have to keep swimming in this ocean. I looked within, that was my notion, and we're 80% water, so it is not the changes that we need to make, but rather the changes that are made through me. I navigate my space, a captain of what I see, cause in the great shift, many lost in the mist, in and they fall in abyss. And I pray for those who won't make it, with the faith that this is all sacred. It's a brave new world for the boys and the girls and the non-binary, with the choice of who they want to marry. Never thought I'd see legal weed in dispensaries. What I'm trying to say, despite my fear, in this age, for every yin there's a yang. Bigger yins, bigger yangs. What I'm really trying to say, despite my fear, in this shift, it's not good, it's not bad, it's not white, it's not black, it's both, it's neither, it's gray. Like everybody is a little gay. So the truth is scary, but don't be afraid. No one will save us, it'll be okay. No one will save us, it'll be okay. I said no one will save us, it'll be okay. No one will save us, it'll be okay. No one will save us, it'll be okay.
All right, that's it for Talk Is Cheap. I just want to say, if you want to look up Plato's stuff, it's Plaedo. It's Plato Wellen, Plaedo Wellen. Really like that last song. So check out Plato. Thanks for listening. KEPW. LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, simulcast on KEPW.org.
Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens. Thou art a garden fountain, a well flowing water.